We're passing a case on the docket just momentarily, and the reason I was checking is because we may have some issues. There may be an emergency in reference to that case, so that's why we're moving on to the second case, which is the Nelson case. And you are Ms. Perko, is that correct?
Would you like me to sign in, Your Honor?
Yes, ma'am, if you would, please.
Absolutely.
And I see there's also a second counsel listed. You're going to proceed fully, is that correct?
I will, it's just me.
Okay, very good, thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you both for being here early and prepared.
You're welcome.
So, Mr. Young, you're ready?
3 minutes, Judge, if I may.
3 minutes again?
Oh, yes.
We can do that. Thank you, sir.
It's worked for me so far, so. May it please the court, my name is Brad Young. I represent Woodrow Nelson, the appellant here. Mr. Nelson should prevail in this case because he was injured during a work activity that was an actual risk of his employment. That activity was kneeling beside a water meter box, and he reached down inside to a water meter that was about 2 feet down. He was on his knees. He disconnected a transmitter that he had connected to the water meter, and then he rose and turned with the transmitter and other tools in his hand. And it's undisputed that as he rose and turned, he suffered an injury in his back. So he suffered an injury by accident. That's undisputed here. The only dispute is whether it arose from an actual risk of his employment. The commission actually found that Mr. Nelson was injured as he arose from performing an occupational duty while in a squatting position. Nevertheless, he didn't get it. They affirmed the deputy commissioner's denial of his claim because he was in an open and flat area and was not in a confined space or awkward position.
Counsel, isn't it essentially, it falls within Southside training? Essentially, we're talking about something that's not a risk of employment according to what the commission's found.
Respectfully, I disagree. Southside is an important case for us because it gives us some evidence of the contours of what an actual risk is, but the our similar case from our point of view is Grove against Allied Signal.
But in Grove, there was very specific factual information that the pipe fitter was actually in an awkward position as a part of what he was required to do from the work. And here, if I remember the appendix correctly, your client testified that he was not in an awkward position. Is that a distinguishing factor that might impact your argument?
No, ma'am. It illustrates what we believe is a tendency in some of these cases to go down the wrong path, which is decision by adjective. Whether it's unusual or awkward, any of those things, there's nowhere in our law that says if it's not unusual or awkward or something like that, it's not an actual risk of employment. The test is it, as Grove points out, is it something I'll use their language. The evidence in Grove proved that the causative danger had its origin in a risk connected with the employment and flowed from that source as a rational consequence. Now, in that case, there was no clear finding that it was he was in an awkward position. The ultimate finding was that he was there was the word awkward, but the ultimate finding was he was crouched.
He was crouched with bending over
the
pipe.
Reaching
towards the pipe.
The factual finding of the commission that this court made clear was he was simply crouched and reaching. And he suffered a back injury, he got an award. So again, what we're seeing with these, what I call decision by adjective is well, can we say that was awkward or not? The proper test is simply, was it an actual risk of his employment? Here, and that actual risk test is the decision by adjective is a subjective, it injects a lot of subjectivity into the law. The actual risk test is simply an objective analysis, and whether you have adjectives such as unusual or awkward, it's irrelevant. Again, can we say this was an actual risk of employment? Here, it's abundantly clear. Mr. Nelson said that this was a normal job duty. He put this transmitter on the water meter, and it, I think, in some fashion, caused a signal to go down the water line, and that enabled him to mark the water lines. And he said that he did this all the time, and he thought he had done this action hundreds of times, if not thousands. That's at pages 49 and 53 of the Joint Appendix. And in his recorded statement he gave to an agent of the employer after the accident, he said, "I have done it 100 times before. I do it all day long." That's at page 230 of the appendix. Nevertheless, the commission said he was in an open and flat area and was not in a confined space or position. Law doesn't support that conclusion. We cited several cases in a brief. Two from this court. Grove, claimant was simply crouched. He was working in a crouched position, reached for a pipe, suffered a back injury, he got an award. And Bassett Walker against Wyatt, the evidence showed that the claimant had a job and she had to repeatedly squat down to replace creels on a machine. And in this case, so her activity was squatting down and standing up. Well, she was actually injured as she was descending with nothing in her hands. She suffered a knee injury. This court en banc said that's an actual risk of employment. Now then, we cited the Orleans versus Dillard's case, which is a case of the commission, and it's not binding here, but it is very illustrative. That was a gentleman who sold suits, and he was crouched down working on, I think, measuring a customer's pants, and he reached for a tool and got the tool, and then the finding was crouched on one knee and then suffered injury to his back as he stood from this bent, crouched position. And there are other cases, I won't go into all of them, but getting back to Southside, one of Southside says it does talk about awkward positions, but it also says an actual risk of employment arises when your employment requires you to do something over and over. You couple that with this court's decision in Liberty Mutual versus Herndon, where the court said the mere fact that it's a hazard the general public encounters is not determined. The issue is if it's something the general public encounters equally with the employee, you're not going to recover. So if Mr. Nelson had gone out this day, and this, he didn't do this, and he just, for some reason, he was out working, maybe they were shorthanded, and he knelt down and did this, he wouldn't have be able to recover because it wasn't an actual risk of his work. But he said, "I've done this hundreds of times, if not thousands. I do this all the time. This is an ordinary part of my work."
But Southside Training essentially said there's certain activities such as bending, stooping, walking that are not necessarily things that are going to fall within that risk category. And I guess what I'm asking is, what takes it out of Southside Training?
Repetition. That was the I think Caporaletti, Groove talks about Caporaletti. Southside was a gentleman who was working for an hour and a half and then he just bent down to pick up a tray and suffered an injury. And then in, I may have it wrong, but if the bending and stooping and all those things, if your job requires you to do that over and over and over, again, the key word is, it's not, we can't simply say, "Oh, well, that's something the general public was exposed to, you lose." There's also that word equally. Was the general public equally exposed? That's the only way to make sense of it. We cited a case from the commission, Brooks against Sears Roebuck. This gentleman worked in the Sears Automotive Department. He squatted down, put a tire on a car, attached the lug nuts, and then stood up, hands empty. And as he stood up, he suffered an injury. All he was doing was standing up from a squat. It's not possible to make a principal distinction between bending or standing up from a squat. There are people, we do that all the time, you know, at home and whatever. It becomes an actual risk of your employment when your job makes you do it over and over and over again. And that's what happened in this case. And that's why we believe the Commissioner Erb asked you to reverse and to grant us the relief we pray for. Thank you.
Thank you.
As this court is aware, this case involves the application of the actual risk test to determine whether or not Mr. Nelson's accident or injury arose out of his employment. The actual risk test has been defined by this court in Plumright Plumbing Services versus Barber to require two things of an injured worker. The first is whether the injury, that the conditions of the workplace caused the claimant's injury. And the second is whether the claimant was engaged in a significant work-related exertion at the time of his injury. And that test, the actual risk test, has been recited by this court, the Supreme Court, the full commission, in many, many cases, one of which is Southside Virginia Training Center versus Ellis, which was a case that I had actually chosen to speak about briefly because of the additional language that case, the specific language that case contains, which I believe is dictate the outcome in this case. And that language in Southside is as follows. An injury is not compensable merely because it occurred during the performance of some employment duty if the act performed by the employee is not a causative hazard of the employment. Simple acts of walking, turning, and bending without any other contributing environmental factor are not risks of the employment. So when you apply the actual risk test and the language used by this court in Ellis, I think it's clearer to see why Mr. Nelson has not been able to prevail on his claim.
Does it make a difference if it's a repetitive act? Opposing counsel alluded to the repetition as being significant.
I think it can make a difference, Senator. I don't think it makes a difference in this case. Usually repetitiveness is dealt with repetitive trauma type cases, which usually results in an injury being not compensable. Movements engaged by a claimant over and over does not constitute a single injury, but repetitive trauma, which is not compensable under the act. I don't believe this case turns on the repetitive nature of Mr. Nelson's injury. I believe this case turns on the fact that he simply cannot meet the actual risk test. The first prong of the actual risk test that I talked about focuses on the conditions of the employment. And in this case, it is undisputed that Mr. Nelson, to perform his job, he had to get down on his knees so he could access the water heater in the ground. And then he had to stand back up and repeat the process. But those work-related activities of kneeling and standing, they're only compensable if a condition of his employment or a hazard or a danger peculiar to his employment causes injury. And in this case, we don't have any evidence of that. Ellis talks about contributing environmental factors, and in this case, as Mr. Young cited, Mr. Nelson was working in a wide open area. It was flat, grassy. He testified there was no debris, no rocks, nothing for him to, no holes for him to step on.
Counsel, I hate to interrupt. Did the tools that he was holding, did they have any impact in reference to
I'm
your,
sorry.
The tools that he was holding, did they have any impact in reference to your argument?
According to Mr. Nelson, they do not. His testimony was that he was holding a meter box puller, a receiver, and a transmitter, and that the weight of those tools was negligible, and it did not contribute to his accident. It wasn't a danger or a hazard. He did, Mr. Nelson did testify that the he had, and his exact words were, quote, a little bit, close quote, a problem controlling those tools. But again, he never said those tools caused my accident. Those tools were a hazard and contributed to my accident.
He said specifically they didn't cause him to lose his balance.
I believe he testified that his back going out is what caused him to lose his balance and fall, if I'm hopefully remembering correctly. But he never, Mr. Nelson never pointed to the tools as being causative of his accident. With regard to the tools, on brief, Mr. Nelson cited several times that he rose with the tools of his trade in his hands. But that just goes to show that Mr. Nelson was at work. That doesn't go towards analyzing and arising out of a case under that. That goes towards whether or not Mr. Nelson was in the course of his employment. Assuming for the sake otherwise, like I just mentioned, Mr. Nelson never attributed the weight or anything about the tools as causing his accident. So for those reasons, not being able to point to any condition of his employment or any contributing environmental factor, it's the town's position that Mr. Nelson fails the first prong of the actual risk test. The second prong looks at the significant work-related exertion. On that issue, Mr. Nelson specifically testified that it did not take any physical effort on his part to kneel. He never testified that any part of his activities or his body movements or anything were exertional, let alone significantly exertional. And in that, I briefly want to touch on the awkwardness that Mr. Young mentioned. Awkwardness is not an element of the actual risk test. The town concedes to that. What awkwardness is another element that, in this case, the deputy commissioner and the full commission considered. And awkwardness is a factor that this court has considered and the Supreme Court has considered in virtually all of the cases cited to by the parties on brief. Awkwardness is kind of, best I can tell, looked at kind of like the court looks at other factors. Is the area in which the injured worker working, was it well lit? Was he in a rush, distracted, things like that. So awkwardness is not part of the actual risk test, but nevertheless an important factor considered by this court in many of the arising out of cases. Awkwardness is relevant in this case specifically because of its complete absence. Mr. Nelson never testified that anything about his movements or his body positions or anything were awkward. And that is important because despite the lack of that testimony, the lone dissenting commissioner in this case found that Mr. Nelson's injury resulted from the awkward positioning of his body. Now, Mr. Nelson never testified that his body position was awkward. The dissenting commissioner cannot find that his body positioning was awkward under Massey versus Firmstone, Mr. Nelson's case.
Well, let me stop you on the Massey versus Firmstone and ask you a question. In terms of Massey doesn't apply if it's opinion. And if he's testifying that getting up was not awkward, arguably that could be an opinion of what his condition is rather than fact, could it not?
Arguably it could, but I think if the commission specifically found that his movement was not awkward, I believe that may be a mixed question of law and fact, but the findings of fact are binding and conclusive on this court if supported by credible evidence. Our position was because Mr. Nelson could not testify or never testified, you know, his positions weren't awkward, the dissenting commissioner is not able to say that.
But the dissenting commissioner could look at the facts regarding the tools.
Correct.
Despite his characterization of what he found in handling the tools.
Correct, Your Honor, but I think both the deputy commissioner and the full commission found that the tools did not
contribute.
Right.
No, I understand.
Exactly. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Outside of the actual risk test, those two prongs, which the town is our position that Mr. Nelson met neither prong, there are two other pieces of evidence which we believe count against compensability. And that is Mr. Nelson's testimony that he simply did not know what caused his accident. During his deposition, Mr. Nelson admitted that in his recorded statement, when he was asked, Mr. Nelson, what caused your accident? He testified, I have no idea, I don't know. And then came the, I have done this 100 times before. So that's the context in which that repetitive saying, I don't know what caused my injury. He could have contributed or implicated any number of things like the weight of the tools or that he was in an awkward position or something of that nature, but he candidly testified, I don't know what caused my injury. And while that alone may not be determinative, when you have a case such as Mr. Nelson's where he cannot meet the first or second prong of the actual risk test, when he comes in and says, I also don't know, that's a big strike against compensability. The last piece of evidence we believe weighs against compensability in this case are the medical records. There is just absolutely no evidence of a causal connection in this case between Mr. Nelson's accident and his injury. All the physicians that treated him simply said that he felt back pain when he was standing up after being on the ground or the floor. No physician has ever opined that an actual risk of Mr. Nelson's accident caused his injury, and no doctor or no physician has ever causally related his accident to his injury. At the end of the day, Mr. Nelson can only contribute standing and turning as the cause of his injury, but those movements, with nothing more, do not allow his claim to be compensable. And just because Mr. Nelson, under the language in Ellis, was performing a work-related activity at the time of his accident occurred, that alone is not enough. Rather, under Barber, under the actual risk test, Mr. Nelson is required to prove that the conditions of his employment or a significant work-related exertion caused his injury, and he has not been able to do so, so he therefore cannot prove that his injury arose out of his employment, and the town would respectfully request that this court affirm its opinion, so find him.
Thank you, Ms. Porker.
You're welcome.
The phrase conditions of the workplace runs alongside the phrase environmental factor analysis. And in Ellis, the paragraph that talks about an actual risk can stem from environmental factors. In the next paragraph, one of those environmental factors is whether a job requires you to do something repetitively. And this is where we need to distinguish between a repetitive injury case, which is where you're like on an assembly line, where you're, I think one of the cases I read was someone who took turkeys off of an assembly line and put them in a box. That's one kind of a repetitive activity. Because the way Ellis uses it, I think, is if you have to do it repetitively, more often than people just out in the general public, because that's what Ellis was talking about, distinguishing simple acts of bending and all that, if they're unconnected with environmental factors of the work. Here, the environmental factor of the work was this activity that Mr. Nelson had to do over and over as part of his work. Now, excuse me one minute. Grove, the concept of whether awkwardness is pervasive in the cases, respectfully, it's not. Again, Grove is this court's seminal case in this area of actual risk. And in Grove, this court said that the activity was usual and did not require exertion are irrelevant. Are irrelevant. And that is in our law. Okay, so we just can't do this decision by adjunct. It just doesn't work. And the issue of whether Mr. had tools in his hands. In Grove, the claimant was squatted, reaching, had nothing in his hands based on the evidence there. In Wyatt, the claimant was empty-handed and simply squatting was part of this activity her job required, squatting, replacing these creels, and then standing. In Brooks, the case I mentioned, the gentleman installing the tire on the car, he squatted down with the tire in his hand, and then he got up empty-handed, and as he stood, he suffered an injury. He got an award from the commission. And in Wyatt, an en banc decision of this court, the dissenting judge, Judge Moon, said she didn't identify it as awkward. In Brooks, the commission case with the gentleman installing the wheel, the dissenting commissioner said she didn't, or he didn't say it was awkward. That's not the test. We don't decide these cases by adjectives. Was it an actual risk of the employment? We cited in our briefs a recent case from the commission, Herndon. I don't have the full site. And in that case, the evidence was a lady worked for a storage company. She squatted down and retied the rope on the, you know, the sliding door. And then as she stood up, she had a clipboard in her hand and she pulled the rope. She suffered an injury as she stood up. And the commission said, if she'd just been standing up, we wouldn't fine for her. But because she had a clipboard in her hand, she wins. Now, they made a big point of that. And that Herndon case from the commission a few months ago cites zero cases. Our perspective is, in the workers' comp claimants bar, is we don't have a standard. We can't find a way to distinguish. I can't find a way to distinguish those, or to justify, to explain the result here. Why did my client lose? All these other clients won. If we got them all together in a room and they all describe what they were doing, and then you look at Mr. Nelson, well, you lost. I wonder why we all won. I can't. I wouldn't. If they looked at me as a lawyer and say, this doesn't make sense. Respectfully, we think we would appreciate an opinion that got us back on track. It reemphasized its actual risk. Mr. Nelson's job required him to do this all the time. He said, I do it hundreds, if not thousands of times. It's not proper. We cited a case from the commission that said, they say it's not proper to home in on one little movement. You look at the whole activity. If you look at the whole activity he was doing, it was an actual risk of his job. He should win. We ask that you reverse the commission's decision and grant us the relief request. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dan. We'll come down and greet counsel.